Hey everybody, welcome back to another review of Star Trek Picard. This is about episode 6 and 7. John Suntress here. Franco will be joining me in a second, but because we didn't have letters last week, and also that we missed last week because of C2E2, it's a combined episode where we talk about 6 and 7. But I immediately started getting responses about what everybody thought of episode 7, and I wanted to share a few of these, and we'll give you more next week as we talk further about the show, and I'm sure after I watch it a third time, I'll have more detailed thoughts on episode 7. But David Ace Gutierrez says that episode 7 was Picard's version of the episode Family from Next Generation. I would agree on that. Tim Davis said Riker got fat. Yeah, he did. David Ailes says Frakes and especially Sirtis were great here. I love their scenes. Genuinely teared up when Troy, upon seeing Picard, expressed concern for him. Everything else not related to Riker and Troy was the usual nonsense and haphazard plotting. Again, I agree. John Layman loved it. John Price, who's a great critic of Star Trek Picard and Discovery, says Alison Pill is acting her ass off in this show, and I appreciate it. Mitch Halleck of Terrificon says he's waiting for Riker's Brick Oven Pizza franchise to open up at Quark's. My buddy Dwayne Burkhardt says he thought it was awesome. Seeing Frakes and Sirtis in these roles again, I thought everything about their moments were great, and I wanted more. Lulu Wilson, though, absolutely blew me away as Kestra. Welcome to Star Trek, young lady. Regarding the episode, I'm annoyed as hell that they killed off Hugh. It was also dramatically unnecessary, but I'm really looking forward to next week's episode, 7 of 9 returning, and I like the Picard version of her character even more than I like the Voyager version. Steven Commander says, couldn't have said it better. You had everything I wanted to say about it. Larry Young, old fat domesticated Riker, the former pussy slayer of Risa, wearing an apron and yelling at the kids to get off his lawn is the best thing ever out of this dopey show, and I love it for obvious reasons. I guess Larry relates to old domesticated Riker. Matt Putnam says, I really enjoyed it. It was cool hearing Dad Riker go into Starfleet mode, arming all the house's security systems. I think they really just let the three characters take over. Without giving the fans what they want, they gave me what I wanted, if that makes sense. Now, I understand what you're saying, Matt. Cully Hamner, he and I talked a lot about Picard over the weekend at C2E2. He says, I felt these three characters together kind of saved it. The pacing and writing is still, in my opinion, on the weak side, but it's amazing how much Stewart seems more like Picard, the Picard I remember, in the presence of Frakes and Sirtis. Their scenes together were really cool. One gripe. Who made the call to put Riker in what was basically a bell-shaped housecoat for that episode? Frakes is heavy. He's a heavy, thick dude these days, but they could have dressed him in a more slimming wardrobe. And then he showed a picture of Jonathan Frakes from a convention around the time they shot Picard. David Halas also says it speaks volumes about Picard that I'd rather watch a grieving Troy and an old man Orson Welles-esque Riker making pizza than a sci-fi yarn around a Borg cube with those new characters. I should be feeling more when Legolas gets trapped on the cube, but was absolutely unconcerned for his well-being. The kid was great here, though. Kestra? So yeah, he really enjoyed Riker and Troy's daughter. Chris Erickson says another episode that took the series no further than anywhere before it. Henry Bernstein says, incredible, I love the show so much. The love between the three of them felt real, not scripted, especially that grown-up hug and kiss at the end. Speaking of real, what Riker and Deanna have been through felt that way too. I gotta be honest, I think the son thing was unnecessary and shoehorned in for, guess what, they've had some sadness in their life too. Whatever. I mean, again, I like Franco says later in the conversation, are we ever going to see this kid, or is that going to develop in anything? Probably not. That's my guess. Mario Tienberg says, best episode of the series so far. And then James Wojal says, adding some much-needed grounding and heart. Fair enough, man. So that's what the people are thinking. Now let's cut to Franco and I. And we'll give you our thoughts, not only about Episode 7, but last week's Episode 6. So here it is now on Word Balloon and the Aw Yeah Podcast.
All
right, it's time for today a double episode review because Francis and I were busy with C2E2.
It was all your fault.
So we had we got a full 90 minutes of Pickard to pick apart today. Star Trek Pickard.
You gonna start already?
Can't help it, man. You know, how are you?
I'm kind of there with you. I think.
How are you post C2E2?
Good, recovering.
Me too. No,
difficult.
I know. Seriously, every year it gets a little harder, man. I'm serious. My legs have been killing me all week. It's like, oh man, come on, come back.
Yeah, you just you tell yourself that you're not gonna do any extraneous activities, but it still hurts.
Yeah,
it just hurts because of the hours and you're having a good time because you're talking to people, but you're talking to people to like, you know, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, and then you're up early and then getting ready and then the day all day long, you're just talking to people and conversing with fans and drawing or whatever, you know, you're doing panels and stuff and I'm doing panels and it takes a toll on you.
Totally, man. No, I agree. In a good way. And like you said, yeah, no, it's all fun. It's a blast. But then, yeah, I'm like, all right, back to work. And I mean, right. I think I told you on Monday I had my teaching, and I'm just like, all right, we're going to call it an hour early today.
Yeah.
Because I need to crawl into bed and just, like, not think for a while.
I thought I had gotten away with it because I know we're not getting a Picard right away, but I thought I had gotten away with it because on Monday, I got back home early. I got home about 11 o'clock, which is when I normally go to bed. And I'm like, oh, this is good. I can get a normal night's sleep before going to work. And I was in a great mood on Monday. And then halfway through the day on Monday, I just hit a wall.
Sure.
And my wife was like, you know, you should really go to sleep early. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I should. So I went to sleep at about 8:30. And
wow.
When I do that, it's always trouble because then at 1:30 in the morning,
sure,
wide awake.
Sure.
Wide awake. And I'm like, absolutely. You know, so Tuesday was even worse than Monday, you know?
I understand, man. No, this is when I'm relieved that I don't have radio work until the weekend. It's like, all right, I'm going to need a couple days to recover. So I hear you. Well, anyway, but it was a blast. And, you know, Star Trek related, there's a great article about the convention. And one of the massive highlights was...
I was going to say Shatner, right?
Yeah, Shatner, I guess, you know, as he always does, he kicks ass at these things. But also George Omai Takei was there. Mm-hmm. And Walter Koenig was there as well. So,
didn't Shatner make some sort of news about being Kirk or not being Kirk anymore or something there while he was there?
I thought it was a reaction to something he said on Twitter, but yeah, and it's
I don't know.
And yeah, they made an article of that. I read that as a separate article, and I get it because he's 89. I mean, you know, that's, again, well, Clint Eastwood's
Picard
directing.
Is older.
Well, right, exactly. Picard is 92 or whatever, right. Of course, character. But yeah, you know, and it's a shame because the only thing, I was talking to Mitch from Terrificon, and I'm like, the only thing that I could see him doing where it wouldn't be a lot of strain, but I would love to see him do it, is like an audio drama of Kirk. Mm. And he could still do that because he could sit down and just, you know, act from the chair. And still be Captain Kirk. But then I was also saying, I don't know if you saw that on Instagram, I was watching Insurrection for like the 50th time, and there's an actor in that I think would make an excellent Kirk if they would ever like decide to stay with the character but cast an older Kirk as opposed to waiting for Chris Pine to turn 60. Mm. And that is, I've got his name here, Daniel Hugh Kelly. He was one of the...
He was Hardcastle and McCormick.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, I remember him.
And I don't know why, but there's something about his face that if you gave him the right haircut, I think he would be a credible-looking Kirk.
I'll give you that one. Yeah. He's similar enough, I would think.
So, people listening, if you want to check my Word Balloon Instagram account, the picture's there from Insurrection.
Or just watch old episodes of Hardcastle and McCormick. That was what was the older guy's name? Brian Keith?
Yes, attaboy, yes. Francis. Attaboy. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Of course, Brian Keith's greatest role on TV was as the Uncle Bill on Family Affair. Buffy and Jody. And his British
butler. Sounded like he started smoking when he was 12, right?
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, French, I don't know about these kids. and Mr. French, the Sebastian Cabot, the quintessential British butler at the same time as Alfred on Batman 66. Mr. French was doing it. Hello, sir. Big heavyset guy. He was the narrator of, now we're way off Star Trek. He was the narrator of the Winnie the Pooh Disney movies.
Right. He was the original Mr. Belvedere.
Yes, Wesley. Not to be confused with Shut Up, Wesley. Well, we're all over the place again. Mr. Belvedere. Mm-hmm. That show. Jesus.
But, you know, Bob Uecker, classic. Come on.
I was going to say, gave Bob Uecker a check. I'm totally fine with that show. Wesley.
I actually liked that show. So good.
Did you really?
I did. I would watch it all the
time. Gilbert Gottfried tells a story about Mr. Belvedere that Christopher, whatever his name was, had an accident that he sat on his balls the wrong way and had to go to the emergency room.
Wow. How low were they hanging?
Jeez. I don't know, man, but it's an old man condition. I mean, I've certainly done it where it's hurt. I've been in pain, but not to the point where I need to go to the ER for it.
Well, I've never done that. I've bit my lip a few times, but I've never sat on my boys. So,
hey, what's the matter, buddy? Bob Uecker. Oh man, those balls are really low and outside.
Just a bit outside.
All right, enough.
Okay, sorry.
That was good. That was fine. All right, back to Star Trek Picard. So let's start with episode 6. Last week's episode. Mm-hmm. All right, so they get to the Borg cube, and Raffi's got to call in and kind of fake Picard's credentials and stuff, which that's fine, whatever.
Because she's drunk too, right? Or high?
Yeah. That whole thing. Good Lord. I know. Raffi's got to hold her shit together while she's talking to the Admiral and stuff. And it's great. So then she finishes the call, and they're all applauding.
Applauding, yeah.
And she half collapses, grabs the bottle, get me back to my bed. Ah!
Right.
Whatever. And that's fine. And I'm cool with it. I mean, that's your classic, you know, hey, old buddy, can you do me a solid? Okay. Right. But never call me again. Whatever. Yeah. I mean, that I don't mind that. That's okay. Where I am like, come on, is Picard beams over to the Borg cube. And it's like this, like, desolate portion of the cube. There are no Romulans to meet him. Now, obviously, they got word that he was coming over, and I don't buy that some sort of Romulan detail would have been there to welcome him, either as a BS sort of, hey, okay, that's fine, or we're really suspicious, we're going to keep our eyes on you.
Now, at first I was thinking that, you know, maybe it was intercepted by Hugh, and Hugh brought him there. But then I went back and I watched that part because I'm like, did I miss something? And I went back, and I'm like, no, the Romulans gave him permission, but you have to go to these coordinates. So I'm like, yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Well, and again, fine, go to those coordinates, and I'm sure they were tracking
him. But there was no one. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. It was just weird. It was just really, really, really weird. Now, I'll say a positive thing. I loved when Hugh and Picard saw each other. That was great.
Yes, I did like that too.
You know, and I'll have more of that in the 7th episode as well. But yeah, and it was great. And, you know, they're both, oh my God, great to see you, whatever. And there's, you get the bond. I mm-hmm. totally understand that. And that's terrific. And the feels were there, and it was earned, and it's totally fine. And Jonathan Del Arco, the guy who plays Hugh, was wonderful. And it bums me out knowing, and again, we've already seen episode 7, and obviously the listeners have as well, that we only got you up until episode 7. And he's dead.
Right, dead. Yeah.
But okay, whatever.
And I have a lot of issues with Eleanor in that one too.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, go ahead. No, go for it, man.
No, I was going to say, let's continue on the track of 6 through 7 before we get to that.
Okay, yeah. I'm trying to think of, all right, so Soji, you know, Narek has to bring out all of Soji's memories and everything, mm-hmm. and that's fine. I didn't mind, like, Soji's dream. Okay, I get it. That's right. Cool. Again, more imprinted memories, and I anytime fake mom shows up to say go to sleep, cracks me up every time.
Right.
I, that always, you know, mm-hmm. don't worry, dear, you work too hard. And also, I like how there's almost like a Max Headroom kind of moment where her screen kind of reset. Smiling before Soji went to, or after Soji went to sleep. That cracked me up. Right. But
I didn't appreciate the stereotype right off the bat with what's the captain's name again of the ship?
Rios? Crystal Balls Rios?
Wow, what Crystal Balls Rios? Yeah, when he's you know, just because he's Spanish, he's got to have a soccer ball, you know?
Oh, that's true. Hello, I'm kicking my ball.
Hello, football. That's what true. You call soccer. Yes.
That's true. I totally forgot about that. And Agnes, man, I'll tell you. Happy to sleep with everybody, apparently. What the hell? Wow. Yeah.
She, like, eats everything and sleeps with everybody.
I'm telling you, man. You got Grandpa Maddox that she's sleeping with, and now she's sleeping with Pele Rios. What the hell? Jesus. That's fine, whatever. But, combining 6 and 7, I get, well, we'll get to it. I guess we'll get to 7.
Yeah, it's got kind of meshed together because I saw them one right after the other. I saw one day before yesterday.
Oh, okay. 6.
Or yesterday, and then the other one this morning.
Sure.
So they're going to kind of get meshed together for me.
Well, and again, Patrick Stewart said from the beginning, even though it's being shown episodically, this is one long story, one long movie, 10-hour movie. And I'm like, all right, whatever. But yeah, all right, good point. I'm glad you brought up the soccer ball. and again, a little romance. Hello, Agnes. Let me comfort you, Agnes. It's like, all right, man, that's cool. I like Rios. I don't know why, because again, the poor guy is being given, like, you know, silly shit to, you know, work with and everything. Again, it always comes down to the bad writing, but I have to say, I do like Rios. I do think he's funny, and I don't know.
He's the one that we know. I was going to say he's the one we know least of, so I haven't really quite made up my mind. I'm kind of liking him, but, you know, the fact that, you know, he's almost stupid as well, you know, because one of the nitpicky things that bothered me is he knows Raffi better than he knows Agnes, but yet he's like, oh, I think Raffi's a spy.
Right, that Raffi's a spy, or at least being tracked or whatever, or something's going on. Yeah, that's true. Well, he's, you know, letting his soccer balls dictate his, you know, why his feelings or whatever. I'm being led by my soccer balls, Raffi. I don't know.
And again, through episode 6, I don't know what it was, but I kept picturing old man Logan with Picard for some reason. Like, I kept seeing that old man Logan character, like, you know, Professor X, old, decrepit, in the back of the pickup truck, not being able to move type thing.
He is dying, and I guess. But, yeah, he is also so naive throughout this whole thing.
Right.
And just so trusting of everybody. And I get it from a story standpoint.
Yeah, but as a starship captain who's had years of experience in this,
right?
I don't buy it.
Right? Yep. Yeah. I mean, that's, again, it's like, I don't know, man. Whatever. What else about 6? So yeah, let's get to Eleanor. So, yeah, don't follow me on the cube. Okay, fine. I understand. Right. He's pledged to him and stuff. All right, two things. One, they got – and by the way, this does click again with Trek continuity, that 40,000-light-year transporter. They I don't know if you read up on it and stuff, but the Borg assimilated this people. I forget their name. It's from a Voyager episode and early on where they meet these people and, oh, yeah, we've got technology that lets us travel with this basically transporter 40,000 light years.
I was going to ask about that because, again, Voyager is one of the show that I didn't watch.
Okay.
All of.
Understood.
I was going to ask about where this technology come from all of a sudden. I was going to ask and see if you knew, and there you go. You do.
Yeah, it's from the Delta Quadrant, and so it makes sense that the Borg assimilated these people after Voyager, and that Starfleet wouldn't have access to it. But now that the Borg have this, two things. One, this is only for the Queen so she can escape.
Right.
The Queen isn't an individual. The Queen – or I get maybe she is, but I always personally felt watching the movies and Voyager, because the Queen shows up a couple times in Voyager too, that it's – they construct a body for the Queen when they need it, but essentially that she's just part of the Hive, and I always took it that the Queen was another subroutine of the Borg. And that, yeah, that when they need to physically manifest her, whatever. But if she wanted to, she could. In fact, she does escape even what happens to her in First Contact, because then subsequently, or no, is First Contact? Is First Contact after Voyager? No, it's before. Or it's before.
Yeah,
it has before. To be before. Of course mm-hmm. it is. Yeah, because I got confused for a second, because when Admiral Janeway shows up in Nemesis, she's Admiral Janeway, and it's post-Voyager. So, yeah. So we first see the Borg Queen in First Contact. She's diddling around with Data, playing with his soccer balls, and then and also and with Picard and Locutus and everything. But, yeah, so first – she doesn't need a transporter to get away, because, again, like, she manifests herself whenever is needed. I understand that her physical body was destroyed in First Contact, but then she shows up two times in Voyager and stuff. So, great two-parter, Dark Victory, I think it was called, and the Voyager finale, the Queen shows up as well.
Okay.
So there's that. And then secondly, now that the Borg have this technology – do they need the cubes anymore? Can't they just be at that big giant? We see in the Voyager wrap up that there's this giant, like, almost space station thing where the cubes leave from, where that's like kind of the central, one of the central places where the Borg are. And, like, couldn't they have these transporters and just, like, zip 40,000 light years to a location?
Yeah, just take over everything in the galaxy through that.
Yeah, and zip back. Yeah. I mean, again, it just. Bad writing. Doesn't make sense. It's kind of stupid. And, well, this is only for the Queen. Really? All right. Whatever. So, yeah, you know, again, and I don't understand why. I mean, I understood why Hugh stayed back, because, of course, he wants to protect his ex-Borg and everything. But the jig's up, so I don't know what he plans to accomplish surrounded by the Romulans and everything. So that's kind of.
Right. He said I loved when he saw Picard. Yes. And that was, like, heartwarming, because he's super loyal to Picard, because he's
absolutely.
Like, I'll do anything for you. But then he did he had one line. He mentioned that, you know, a Romulan is our queen now. Our queen is a Romulan now. He said at one point, and I thought, does he mean that just in kind of like conversation, like, oh, you know, these are our masters right now, or you know, is he beholden to them, or well, obviously not. Then when he gets to episode 7 and he goes against everything, but
and is line, Rizzo? I forget her Romulan name. Is she the queen now? Is she the head of all the, you know? She seems to be, obviously. Right. She certainly seemed to be in charge of all the Romulans.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but meanwhile, Eleanor, you know, that's fine. He saves them. That's okay. That's kind of classic action thing. Yeah, we told you to stay behind.
But then, no, you go ahead. You had plenty of chances to go with.
Right. Right. It's no, like, I'm going to stay behind. Why? Yeah,
why?
For what purpose? Yeah. Because all you are is a sore thumb surrounded by a bunch of Romulans who aren't going to like you. And, yeah, you're not going to be much help with your sword while they got a bunch of disruptors and everything. And we saw even more of that in episode 7 when he actually – I figured he was going to die there. Because it's like, well, they're surrounded. He's certainly good luck, he and you.
Well, I was kind of hoping, because he was so dumb.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, man. Once again, you've got two former Tal Shiars, Alfred and Hazel, working for you.
Yeah.
Back on the vineyard. No, you guys stay by. You need to feed the dog. I can't leave any. I can't leave the dog alone. But I'm gonna I'm gonna take this naive warrior Romulan. Who knows Dick? He knows nothing other than how to use his sword. He knows nothing other than his religion, obviously.
But even notwithstanding all that, like, when they're making their escape, no, come with us. In the time it took you to argue, all of you could have went.
Yeah.
I mean, even Hugh. I mean, and I understand why Hugh doesn't.
And I agree with you and Hugh, too. I would have taken Hugh as well. But again, you're loyal to his ex-Borg. I get it.
Right. I get that, you know. And he could have gotten out and fine. But why is Eleanor staying there? What possible reason is there for him to have stayed there?
Because it's exciting. Not because it makes sense.
Choose to live, except for me, because I'm not going to.
Right. What about your pledge and everything? I release you from the pledge. Well, I'm still going to stay. What?
I'm glad that lasted for a whole episode, that pledge. I'm glad we make commitments to each other and they hold.
Again, because it's exciting. That's the only reason I can think of that this happens. And again, that's bad writing, man. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be an asshole, but yeah. So
people listening to you right now saying you are
too late. Exactly. Well, that's why. Oh, you know, honestly, at C2E2, it was very eye-opening in terms of friends that are like, I love Discovery, I love Picard, and other friends, of course, I'm disappointed. Are you kidding me? And I'll just tell you the people that agree with us. Cully Hamner, the great Cully Hamner, the co-creator of Red, the co-creator of Jaime Reyes, the new Blue Beetle, or the most recent Blue Beetle, and the great Andy Price of My Little Pony fame. So, yeah, those are the two guys in particular that I'm just like, oh, come on. And they're like, yeah, we know. We're angry too. So so that was cool. And Tom Zoller, who I always liked of Love and Capes fame and fun cartoony stuff. He's like, I got to tell you, man, I'm having a great time. I'm digging it. And I'm like, okay.
I did have a number of people come up and say that they listen to us.
Me too. Did I tell you about my lunch? I had our buddy Wayne.
Yeah, go ahead.
From Canada. So before the show, Thursday afternoon, before we went to the Hyatt, we have lunch near me because he wanted to go to Chicago Comics. And we're eating at this restaurant. And, of course, I'm louder than hell. I can't help it. And this Irish guy comes up and he's like, pardon me, are you John Suntris from Word Balloon? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, listen, I'm a little confused. Not sure exactly how you feel about Star Trek Picard. Can you maybe talk a little bit more about it? I'm pounding the table laughing. I'm like, that is fantastic. Absolutely jamming. And he was great. He could not have been sweeter. He's like, I really like the podcast. Maybe a little too much on Star Trek Picard. And I'm like, yeah, no, I get it, man. Much like Rios's emergency hologram, medical hologram. What the shite?
Oh, that's another thing I want to bring up. But did you tell him that he could skip these episodes if he wanted?
Right. Well, of course everybody has that option. No, I'm like jam away, my man. It's all good. By all means, make fun of me. I got no problem with that.
Right. The hologram. Okay. Let's talk about the hologram.
Yes, please.
Holo Rios, or whatever his name is.
Yes.
At the end of episode 6, is it? I can't remember when, but doesn't Raffi say where's the emergency hostess hologram or something like that?
The hospitality one? Go on.
Yeah, and nobody appears. Did she shut him down? Or because the doctor one, the emergency doctor one, shows up at the end when Agnes is foaming at the mouth.
Right, in 7, yes.
Right. But
right.
Raffi, like, you know, does she says something about some sort of emergency and nobody shows up.
Oh, I didn't remember that piece of dialogue, but I do like that once again, this emergency hologram is always like 20 seconds too late to do anything other than say, hey, guess what? Apparently Agnes is in a coma and she's foaming at the mouth. Great. Yep.
What's the nature of your emergency? Oh, you're dead. Okay. Well, we'll come back.
In a coma, I guess. And I saw the teasers obviously for next week. So Agnes survives her, her coma. But, well, and let's, hey, can we have more gross things coming out of Agnes's mouth? First of all, Commodore O gives her the mind meld and she vomits from that.
All and that then, sushi gone. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, and then at the end of the episode, like she said, I'm assuming racked with guilt, she's trying to kill herself. But again.
Or sterilize the tracking bugs in her. Because then at the end.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes. Well, that's, yes.
Make-believe Spock.
Garrick, yes.
Yeah, he can't find them on his little...
Right, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point. But again, now let's go back to the mind meld. So we get a bunch of flashes of images, and if you rewatch the mind meld images and then see the teaser for next week... Commodore O is in some sort of hood, and then at the in the teaser for next week, there's a circle of Romulans/Vulcans. Who knows? They're wearing the hoods as well, so all that's connected. But again, is it is she giving these images to a human? And you should rethink your point about helping Picard because this is how horrible Maddox and everything is, or did they trigger a subroutine and Agnes is still a robot and, you know,
right.
We don't know.
No, I have to. I have to admit that I'm space racist, I think.
Go on.
Because I can't tell the difference between Romulans and Vulcans anymore. Because I didn't know that she was a Vulcan. I mean, I kind of knew she was a Vulcan, but when they show Romulans, when I first saw Eleanor, I thought he was a Vulcan, not Romulan. I just can't tell the difference between any of them anymore.
Well, because I know Hazel was pointing out Alfred's head ridges and that he's from a certain area of Romulus that they have the head ridges. And of course, because Commodore O is considered a Vulcan on Earth, I thought maybe she was a secret Romulan. And of course, they look similar enough because they were once one race. So, right. You know, she could pass, you know, in very racist terms. But, yeah, I don't know. And but also, I don't believe Romulans have the mind meld ability or was the mind meld technique taught. I'm not certain of that. But I'm assuming that she's then maybe she is a Vulcan that, you know, has decided, no, this doesn't make sense. I'm going to throw in with these people in the same way that Belaris from Star Trek VI is absolutely a Vulcan, but she's throwing in with the Romulans and the Klingons to screw up the peace.
But that brings up the question. So she tells Agnes to eat this thing so we can track you. Basically,
yep.
You have to bite it.
Yeah, you got to chew it.
Then how does new Spock or Romulan Spock know to follow her? Did his sister tell him?
Yeah,
did
I'm guessing.
Commodore tell the sister?
Sure.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, I'm assuming that's all implied, given that I'm sure she's been in constant contact with Commodore O. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. I mean, they established that she's sending Rizzo, I can't remember her real Romulan name, to the Romulan cube and everything.
I love people that are trying to listen to this and follow us. Which one's Rizzo?
I think I'm sure if you're a hardcore Star Trek fan, you might be interested in this. And secondly, yeah, I think they're on page with us. I think they get
it. Did you catch the two I don't know if they were two references, but one was definitely a Star Wars reference where Agnes is when she says, "Oh, what are we going to go hide in an asteroid over there and then be swallowed by a giant monster?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, I caught that star."
That's all right. Yeah, that's okay. I'm cool with that.
Yeah,
that's
and then right after that was a reference to Guardians of the Galaxy, where she says, "Point that to Earth and press play." I don't know. Maybe that might be a little.
Oh, bit that's interesting.
Reach on my part,
is mixtape or whatever.
Yeah, but it might be a little reach on my part. I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. That's fine. I'm okay with that. Nah, you know, and that's why. Again, I do have enough of a sense of humor where it's like,
right,
that's cute. That's fine. That's cool. Uh-huh. I'm not gonna harp on that. No big deal. But back to Six and the triggered memories of Soji. So, all right, help me out. So they go into this room with a wooden floor on a spaceship.
Right.
With now, Kansas. Maybe that's to be ceremonial and have that proper kind of look. Okay, fine. But then, you know, it triggers the memory. I love the shot of mannequin Soji.
That's Pinocchio. Just
exactly the wooden torso and everything. Right. That's fantastic. And it's a planet with two red moons and a lot of lightning, and that ties into the.
But even before that, when she is scanning the pictures, and it's, you know, 37
like
months
that
old. 37
like
months old. Why didn't she just scan herself?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, because I don't think she wants to know and don't want to know the truth.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like that. I thought that was okay. That that again, I can appreciate that being kind of scary and everything for her.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, then Eric, okay, I've got my information. Let me lock you in the secret room here, and you know, with the poison gas. Okay, and then she starts ripping up the wooden floor. Now
she's triggered.
And of course,
I am every time somebody says,
or me, you know, hey, there's a new episode of Star Trek Picard. I start ripping up the floor as well. Absolutely. But she has a positronic brain, and yes, she has superhuman strength, but it's still a human body. She's tearing up this wooden floor. How come, like, no blood? There's a little blood on her head after the fact. Her hands are fine. I get splinters sharpening pencils. I don't know how the hell she's like ripping up this floor with her human hands.
Something that passes as human skin, but is not.
No, because they've said from the start, can a synth have, you know, can you make it an android? I hate that synth crap. Can you make an android with, you know, a human body and put a positronic brain in it? And Agonis laughs at Picard, but obviously that's what Maddox did. And this is why Soji and Daj were able to pass for human all this time. Because
I like to call them Daj and Saj.
I like that too. That's very good. If they were in a vaudeville team, they would be Dodge and Such. I get it, and that's fine. But once again, how does the human claw up the wooden floor and not have any blood or anything like that? And I know it's a little thing. You'll forgive me, but it's like, well, that doesn't, again, it doesn't make sense. You know, and also having a wooden floor on a spaceship. Now I realize it's within the spaceship. So it's not like, well, good thing, you know, she didn't like rip up through the hull, the wooden hull, because I don't know how that's going to work in space. But even normally and stuff, I mean, that room has got to be kind of pressurized in some way with all the traveling that they're doing, that it's not constantly just like, hey, the Romulan priest room that we do dream walking in is got a bunch of cracks again. Can you fix the wooden floor again? All right.
Well, so I don't know. Even before that, when they go look for Daj, Hugh just like walks into her room, and are they all just open? I can just walk into randomly anybody's room, where they sleep and stuff like that. Or yeah, he has access, I think, right?
Yeah, I think A, he has access, and B, I mean, it's a Borg cube, so I don't think it was built for privacy. Hey, where's 4 of 19? He's in the bathroom. Don't bother him. Don't walk in there. So I don't think they have to worry about that.
So. Also, I know we're jumping around all over the
place. All good. No, I think we're talking about stuff.
Watching the scenes for episode 8 coming up and 7 of 9, does she take over the Borg cube? Because it looks like she's got those tendrils or something like that hanging behind her. Or was that just like from a fight or something?
Oh, good. I don't know. But also, regardless, and I understand, okay, Eleanor is calling a 7 of 9 to rescue him and everything. Unless she's bringing a shit ton of Rangers with her. She's going to, walk out to the Borg cube? I mean, I love the fight scene, or I love the scene in the bar.
She can handle it.
Okay, I guess. I guess. Again, we'll see how implausible that all plays out next episode. That's fine. What else before we get to the obvious and stuff? Because, I mean, eventually we'll talk about Riker and Troy and their daughter and everything. And that idyllic planet. Every planet looks like Earth. Every planet looks like Earth. With the Vasquez rocks are the most exotic scene, and that is on. They call it because it is the Vasquez rocks of Earth. But everything else, it's like, all right, we're on this Romulan planet that we send all the refugees to. That looks like Earth to me. All right, hey, here's Riker and Troy's planet. It's called Pepatine or whatever the hell it was called, Nethathine or whatever. Great, yeah, it looks like Earth. Great. Hey, look, they got a nice little house. And you know, Mitch was, and I want to go back to compare. Mitch is like, that looks like Kirk's house from Generations from the Nexus. And it kind of did. It's my house. Yeah. It used to be.
Well, Riker got a good deal on it.
Maybe. Yeah, exactly. Hey, I saw in the Nexus, Kirk had a pretty nice place. Is that up for sale now that he's really dead? And he's under that pile of rocks on Viridian 3? I'd like to have his house. Butler! The Great Dane. I loved when, first of all, their daughter, okay, whatever. I'll get to the daughter in a second. My only eye-rolling moment. Uh-huh. What's that?
Thing happened to their son.
Yeah, and again, little unnecessary soap opera, but okay, whatever.
Right. Well, that's my thing about bringing up things that, are they going to come back to it at some point? Because I don't think they're going to be series regulars, where it's just something throwaway that they have in the background. I do love that when Riker kind of scolded Troy, he called her Imzadi.
Yeah, and that was fine, but I mean, that really is kind of a whole romantic love thing, and I don't think he drops Imzadi in public like that. I think it was, at least as I always interpreted using the word Imzadi, it really was like, beloved, like, wait a minute, beloved. And it's right. Like, all right, whatever. Again, easy reference, a Pavlovian Trek kind of, oh, look, he said Imzadi. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But before that, when Troy, again, and this is a good thing, when Troy first sees Picard, that was great. And when she realized, first she's like, you're in trouble. And then she touches him and realizes he's dying.
Yeah.
And it's all subtext, but it was great. Mm-hmm. It was great. I almost cried because yep. she's ready to cry. And he's like, really, I'm okay. That was terrific. That reminded yep. me of Force Awakens when Han and Leia see each other. And it's literally just, okay, here's the last 40 years between us. You know, I'm sorry. I love you. We fucked up with our son. You know, whatever. And it's just like, it was just them staring at each other, but it was this great long take of subtext between mm-hmm. them. And yeah. I felt that the same way with Troy and Picard. And that yeah. was cool. I was good with that. And honestly, I like the way that they were portrayed in the episode. I mean, they should be this haven. And also Hugh as well. Hugh, Troy, and Riker are the only people in this show that when they first see Picard are like, hey, how are you? Yeah. Jesus, we're not, you know, as opposed to you fucked up my life.
Right.
I hate you.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was fine. And
everything,
I liked
yeah, everything before Enterprise or after Enterprise had to have been such a mess in his life.
I guess. I mean, that Admiral hates guts. Yeah. And, you know, yeah. Crystal or whatever her name was. Yeah. I mean, yeah, everybody. Yeah, Raffi hates his guts. I mean, that's what I'm saying, man. David Paymer, who played the doctor from the Stargazer, he was happy to see him. Although, hey, guess what? You're dying. So, right. Which I love that character, by the way. I love that whole exchange. And I love David Paymer. So that was kind of cool going back a few episodes. But no, I was, you know, for the most part, it's fine. And, my only little eye rolling moment was, okay, so we know that again, this homeworld, air quotes, that the Romulans are looking for, two red moons, lightning. Okay, she's discovered home. Where is this thing? And again, Mitch, you know, Mitch and I talk off the air about this almost as much as you and I do from Terrifica.
You should just bring him on the air next time.
Yeah, really, if he had time during the day and stuff. We should, but, you know, we never know when we're recording. So,
right.
But Mitch made a good point that maybe the fact that all this stuff is so in ancient Romulan history, maybe it goes back to a time when there were still one people with the Vulcans, because this homeworld, this captain that we never see, but that Riker's daughter continues to refer mm-hmm. to, oh, our friend, blah, 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 used to be in right. Starfleet, older than Picard. Okay, great. And while they're trying to figure all this out, you know, the kid's texting the captain under the kitchen table. And it's like, oh, this is a real mystery. We don't know. And then she whips it out. And again, this is where I roll my eyes. Well, it's this planet. Doesn't have a name. It's in this star system. Right. Teehee, I already figured it out. And it's like, all right. Again, because it's a cute yeah. moment and the kid solves the problem. Almost
but
in a Wesley.
But it's also, yeah, exactly. But they set it up that way because of, you know, she's still playing along and making up languages that the brother you
right.
know, made up.
Right.
And so she's like super smart kid. And yeah, sure. But it was a little eye rolling. Yeah.
Yeah. Because also where is this planet? Because the whole thing with the Federation and the Romulan Empire, that whole neutral zone, that was all established because as both groups, the Romulans and the Federation were exploring space, they encounter each other where the Beta Quadrant and the Alpha Quadrant meet. So I would think if this is a Romulan homeworld, it's within the Romulan Star Empire, unless it turns out that no, this does go back into ancient Romulan history when, again, Vulcan is in the Alpha Quadrant. So maybe it's an area near Vulcan where this homeworld is. That's the only explanation I could think of until we get more information, as I'm sure we will in subsequent episodes. But it's like, yeah, it's this super secret thing, and it's like, all right, yeah. And again, maybe that is more plausible that the Romulans then don't know about this world because it's not within the Star Empire.
Mm. I'll agree with you there, I think. Yes.
Yeah, I you know, did any of that bother you when they're like, oh yeah, you know, hey, Captain Captain Offscreen seems to know where everything
is. Well, this whole episode felt like a big nostalgia episode.
Oh, totally.
You know, with Riker and Troy, and it felt good to be back with them and the crew and like when she was telling him, treat it like we're at in the ready room.
In the ready room, yeah.
And Riker's the only one who's like, you're kind of an idiot, but I like you.
yeah, but I wouldn't expect anything less from you.
Right.
Nobody else would think you'd have to do this, but I know you better. You're going to do this and everything. Yeah, it was fine. No. I thought it was fine. And again, I think they all responded like they should. Hey, I'm in trouble. All right, shields up, Hey, Romulans are after me. Fine, let's invent some bullshit technology. The anti-cloaking detector. Whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
I loved all that stuff right up until they went to that old man park bench by the water and they had their arms around each other.
it's okay.
I like that too.
Actually. Yeah, yeah. But again, they're like
friends sitting there and yeah.
It's that Bridges of Madison County planet that they are on that I'm just like, okay, all right. That's an alien world. They even have rabbits. They even have rabbits on the goddamn.
No, unicorn rabbits.
Yeah, were they called unicorn rabbits?
I don't know.
Something like that.
They have a venom sack. Ooh.
Yeah. No, I didn't. We're going to eat pizza and die from it, Mom. Yeah, I'm not dense, all right? I know what I'm doing. I got my busted compass, but I know what I'm doing. Jesus, too goddamn funny. So, yeah, there's that. I apologize, everybody. I should put up an image of this episode and give people a chance to do some feedback. But because of C2E2, obviously we're a little disorganized beyond watching the episodes. But I'm trying to think of any other little thing that we haven't covered. So yeah, I mean, Narek's on their asses. They do know a bit more about these planets. I assume that again, they're tracking her to find the planets or whatever.
I think they already kind of know where they have a head start. They know where the planet is. That's why they were going to kill her. I think they're just after her to kill her, which...
Well, I thought they didn't know where the planet was until she revealed her dream.
Well, yeah, but then he tried to kill her.
Right.
But now I don't know why he's going after her. Why not just go to the planet? That was your whole purpose in the first place. Now he's going after her, and I'm kind of confused as to why.
She's the destroyer, so I think they believe in the prophecy that, hey, when she does, now that she's triggered, because they tried to kill her and weren't able to, that, if she stays alive, that the prophecy might be fulfilled. I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. And again, I think they all believe in that. And again, with the trailer for next week and stuff, you see some more Romulan mysticism with this group of hooded Romulan women and stuff in the circle. So I don't know.
Now, is Eleanor going to stay behind and take over the cube, or
no? I think
Hugh's gone, because I was upset that Hugh was gone.
Honestly, I am too. And also the killing of all the ex-Borg and everything. I get it, and that's your classic kind of World War II thing. We need information. All right, start shooting prisoners until we get information. But that was pretty harsh. And especially after all the warm, that was, by the way, a couple other things about episode 6 that I did like. When, first of all, when Picard's walking around and a few of the ex-Borg and they're like, "Look, Cutis," like they recognize him right away. Yeah. But also again, and it was a nice moment when the one ex-Borg is kind of, they're fixing his face as best as they can. And he feels more like a human being again, or whatever, carbon-based life form, whatever race he was, if not Romulan, whatever, and that he's kind of crying and stuff, and that he's happy to be free of all the Borg shit and everything. I like that. I thought all that was cool. And again, that was all beautiful, and then the next episode, we kill them all.
Yeah.
Let's mow them down.
I love it. Another super, super picky thing for me is, why doesn't anybody put any railings on catwalks in outer space?
Yeah.
Because Picard shows up in episode 6 and he beams over, and then he starts having flashbacks, And then, you know, all the Borg are grabbing him. It's so you won't fall down. Well, why don't you put a freaking railing up on these spacewalks?
Well, because, like, yeah. Borg, again, they're sure-footed. They're not really sentient. Or
with Sith Lords and Borgs, like, every evil thing in the galaxy never puts up a railing.
Well, they're not expecting Alec Guinness and Patrick Stewart to be traipsing around their areas and stuff. Oh.
It's just the old Englishmen that'll fall off the railing.
Exactly. Right? I could really use a rail in this place, Luke. Man, you're right. So, yeah, poor. And again, 92, man. And again, can withstand an explosion that catapults him 50 yards away, but stairs and lack of a railing, that's a big challenge. That's a big fucking challenge. Oh, man. How come they don't put an elevator or an escalator in this place? That would be great to have a Borg escalator. Just have him just slowly, or the boy. This is mean, boy. Don't be. I'm just teasing guys, and women. But he needs the chair that goes alongside the stairway for the incredibly elderly.
Well, we have a solution. Just don't fall. Yeah. Commercial.
Exactly. Or there's a walk-in tub on the Borg cube as well. Thank God. And it's so funny. Mitch is like, how come Riker and Troy have, like, you know, all like the wood burning oven and all the very low tech, you know.
Yeah, hey, Paisan, he was making pizza.
Yeah, absolutely, he was. I know, with his homegrown tomatoes.
Right.
But yeah, he's like, how come, you know, the shower is like an old fashioned shower? I'm like, well, I'm okay with them like deciding, all right, we're gonna have a low tech house and everything. That's all right.
Or, you know, Riker's from Earth as well.
Right. Yeah, from Alaska, for God's sake.
Exactly. He's a frontier man.
Yes, absolutely, man. So, yeah, I think he's used to roughing it, and he kind of likes roughing it. But, again, it is cheaper as opposed to having a sonic shower or whatever you would need to build for a, you know, 24th century bathroom, you know. So, I don't know. But, yeah, you're right.
They are friends with Picard, so they should have a walk-in tub.
Yeah, exactly, man. It's totally true. My God. All right, so where are we? So Agnes is in a coma. She'll get out of it eventually.
Right. Too much red velvet.
Yep. Yeah, too much red velvet cake. Exactly. Yeah, that's the other thing. When Raffi's like, hey, come with me. I'm going to fix you up. I thought for sure they're going to start vaping.
She goes, cake? Oh, yeah, there'll be cake. I thought they were she was going to get her high. Well, maybe it's an edible. Wow. We don't know.
Exactly. I was going to say, that's what I said to Mitch. I go, maybe the cake was dosed, and we don't.
Well, no wonder she was so high. She had like 7 pieces of it.
Yeah, I had 3 pieces of cake, man. I want more cake. I'm totally tripping right now, Crystal Balls. Jesus. Where's your soccer ball?
Crystal Balls.
His name's Crystal Ball. That's why. I forgot. We want to call him Crystal Balls. Jesus. All right. So they beam back on the ship. Soji and Picard, and they're gonna head to this planet. They know where they're going now, and Narek is still after him, I assume. Eleanor's stuck in the Borg cube waiting for 7 of 9 to rescue him.
I'm glad we found out a few episodes ago. Like, I'm glad we found out so much about Raffi's past and her son, because that's been playing into things a lot. I'm so happy about that.
The only thing I can think of with that is, and maybe it'll be something they explore in season 2, is that Raffi's daughter-in-law is Romulan. And maybe that's going to be something, because she seemed to have the ridges on her head when she was very pregnant. As opposed to, you know, because again, could be a Vulcan, could be a Romulan, we're just not sure. So that's the only thing I can think of, and maybe it's something that they can explore in the next season, and especially given that they've already had the green light for season 2. But we'll see. Again, other than being a terrible, life-shattering memory of, oh, I fucked up with my son, and now I've got a granddaughter that I'm never going to know. Yeah, I can't think of anyone else that's not, that covers the whole crew and everything and what's going on. And, you know, and.
Yeah, Agnes is a complete mess. Elmer is stupid.
Right.
Picard is dying. Raffi is high. And Crystal Balls like soccer.
And again, his holograms are always 10 seconds too late to really help.
Right. Good. I think we've got everything.
All right, I think we've complained enough. I will post in I Like Pink and on my page. And of course, Franco wants to share it on his page.
Absolutely.
So people can chime in.
I do have to say I liked episode 7 a lot better than I liked episode 6. Was better at the beginning.
Yeah.
But
No. And again, like I think a lot of feels, and they earned the feels. And yes, it's great to see more former cast members all together. And I thought they were consistently written in the best way. Yeah, it's good. We should end on a positive. So yeah, it was great seeing Riker and Troy. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think
I still have a crush on Troy.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too. Oh no, she's great looking. Absolutely, man.
I met her years ago. She was fantastic.
I would love to meet her, and also just because I like, as I'm sure with Paisans, with you, Greeks are always happy to meet other Greeks, and totally like, oh, fantastic. Who do you know? Whatever. I know I'm from England. And I know you're from Chicago, but I bet we know a lot of the same Greeks in common. Yeah, I bet we do actually. So yeah, I could, you know, no, I would love to meet her sometime, and that's why. And you know, Frakes was going to come to Terrificon, but schedule conflict, so he had to cancel. So he's not.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, even before Mitch was going to announce anything, it was like, yeah, I got a conflict. So, dude, I certainly hope that the coronavirus, as it's already canceled, or they haven't canceled Emerald City.
No, Reed Pop canceled a London show. That they were doing. Emerald City is
next weekend.
Still on next weekend. Major publishers, a lot of artists.
Yep.
Between publishers and artists somewhere, I think I read like 70 people or you know, publishers have pulled out. Artists and publishers have pulled out already.
Yeah. Well, and again, Seattle, there are a lot of, like, it's close enough to Portland that it's probably a car ride away. And I mean, although Seattle is one of the hotbeds of where Corona has really exploded, or Washington State. Because people are like, why don't they just cancel it? And it's like, well, I kind of, even from a morale thing for people that are like living there and stuff. And it's like, I get it in that sense. Did you see the James Bond movie got pushed back to November?
November, yeah.
Yeah, for that obvious reason. My sister is in, my sister Penny is in the pharmaceutical business, and she helps organize international conferences and stuff like RISA for people to all get together and do stuff. And yeah, she's like, oh my God, you know, obviously trips are canceled and conferences left and right with what's happening.
Schools are closing. Here in New York, they closed down a bunch of schools already in Manhattan and stuff. Yeah,
sure. So yeah, it's a shit. Oh, and also I should say, maybe we're the last McCormick Place show for a while, because this weekend they were going to have the Houseware show.
And where they canceled that, I heard. Yeah.
Yep. 60,000 people normally come from out of town, and again, it's not just the convention, but it's the hotels and it's the restaurants and the bars. Mm-hmm. And yeah, man. So no, it's insane, and we'll see what happens as things progress. But geez, yikes.
Yeah, I thought we were going to end on a good note. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. Exactly. So keep washing your hands. Don't touch your face. I haven't been touching my face. Yeah, nobody asked you. Thanks for telling us that. You know, don't worry. The vaccine's on the way. And then, of course, the CDC. Yeah, it's about a year and a half away. But okay.
Yeah. Well, I hope everybody stays safe. And
absolutely. And wash your hands.
You have to do what you have to for you. And
sure.
I get it. But yeah. And you know, speaking just from an artist perspective, you know, a lot of income for artists comes from these shows. And if people aren't going and people have to pull out, maybe, you know, consider going to their websites and maybe consider buying something.
You know, absolutely. And also, I was kind of kicking around the idea. I was talking to Fred Van Lente and Ryan Dunleavy last night. And I'm like, you know, things really, really do get bad. We should organize some sort of, like, on Skype or Google Hangout or something like that, little mini con of, like, get a bunch of people online and also let people talk to them and stuff. And we'll do like an online convention or something. Yeah. And, you know, totally free and everything, but like give a chance for fans to talk to creators and maybe do some business. Hey, you know, go to their Etsy site, go to their website and draw up some commission business. Absolutely.
Either that, or I was talking to Sarah Richard last night, and I was thinking of starting my own convention called BubbleCon, and everybody comes in a bubble suit.
I understand. Absolutely. Like not only Bubble Boy, that Bubble. Terrible comedy, but the original Bubble movie, the Boy in the Plastic Bubble.
Yeah.
John, Faster, Gina, faster. It's so weird because he's watching her horseback ride while he's in the bubble.
Right.
But I love that line. It's so weird. Sure it is. Robert Reed, the dad on that Boy in the Plastic Bubble movie. And I want to say Shelley Vabre was the mom. I'd have to go back and
Robert Reed, Mr. Brady?
Mr. Brady was nice. The Boy in the Plastic Bubble's dad.
I did not remember that.
Absolutely, man. I love that movie. I believe it's still on YouTube. I believe it's a very shitty copy, but I'm pretty sure it's like on YouTube or whatever. Dick Clark produced movie. How about that?
Yeah.
Telling you. All right.
All right.
So once again, we started with tangents. We ended with tangents. But
what we do.
Absolutely. So, no, good Franco Clanko review of Star Trek Picard, Episode 7. We got three more to go. Do you think it's going to end? I hope the story ends, and certainly I'm sure there's going to be some little dangling thing to lead into the second season. But that was another thing Mitch and I said. And he's like, you think there's going to be an ending? I'm like, I hope so. I mean, at least to this initial mystery, I would certainly hope so.
I would think so, yeah, right.
Well, but then again, Patrick Stewart's like, really, this story, if we're allowed to do it the way we want to, is really going to take three seasons to tell. And so, and again, my feeling is that eventually they will, much like Kirk in Generations, kill off Picard, and then the crew will continue to do stories at some point. Mm. That's my belief.
They'll rechristen the ship the Picard.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Exactly. Maybe the ship becomes Picard. Exactly. I don't know. There you go, though. All right, man.
All right. Well
until
we'll
next
see,
time.
We'll see you next week.
Yes. Live long and prosper and enjoy some good fire burned oven pizza.
Tomatoes. Code red.